Welcome to the podium, Steve Treader, who most of you know. He's a longtime presenter at Sabre. He has written for the Hardball Times for many years, and he is our reigning Seymour medalist with his book on Hearthstone, right? 40 Years a Giant. And he's going to talk about the 1970 San Francisco Giants tour of Japan. And as I step down, I am going to pass around our volume for you to look at. Please, the last person when they're done, please bring it back up to me because this is my personal copy. Okay?
Thank you, Rob Fitz. I was just delighted when Rob invited me to take part in this great collaborative project of his. And he said, could you, write something about the 1970 Giants tour of Japan? And now, two things about that. Number one, I remember the 1970 Giants tour of Japan. 1970 was the summer that I turned 12 years old. Remember back to when you were 11 or 12 years old, how much you were invested in your favorite team, how passionate your love and interest was in your team? Well, that was me in 1970 with the Giants. So I remember it, and as we'll get into here, the memories weren't all good. It was not a winning achievement for the Giants, but that part of it, and yeah, I'd love to write about that. But then I said, well, Rob, I'm pretty much an expert on the Giants, but I don't know anything about the Japan, other than the bare outlines that I remembered as a 12-year-old. I didn't know any of the details about it. Rob, I'm not an expert on Japanese baseball. Well, you want to do a project, do it with Rob Fitz. Rob goes, oh, no problem. He emails me all the research. A whole bunch of newspaper articles, more than enough for me. All I had to do was organize it and write it up. So thank you, Rob, for that very easy article to write. The Giants Tour of Japan in 1970. I don't have a big elaborate presentation here. I've got a few slides. But this is basically just to hopefully stimulate some questions and discussion about this. The 1970, I'm going to have to put on my glasses here. Concession to old age. Did I mention that I was 12 in 1970? Do the math. The 1970 Giants Tour was sponsored by the Lotte Orions baseball team. So the Giants were the guests of Lotte, but they played a number of teams in their tour. It's about 2 weeks. It was in March. This would be the third time the Giants had toured Japan. They were, in fact, the first Major League team in 1953, the first Major League team to tour Japan as a team. There had been, of course, many tours before, but they were all-star teams, college teams, and different kinds of teams that went. But the Giants in 1953 went as a full team for the first time. They repeated, had another tour in 1960, by which time they were the San Francisco Giants. And so 1970 was their third tour. 1970, however, was different from the previous tours in that it took place in March, in spring training. The previous tours had all been post-MLB season, kind of barnstorming things, but this was right in the heart of the Giants' spring training schedule, and that raised some concerns about just how practical this was going to be from the Giants' point of view, given that they weren't, ready yet for competitive games. They were in spring training mode. And how would that impact the nature of the games they played? And also, a big concern was the weather, which is probably always a concern in Japan, but the weather in March in Japan can be challenging for baseball, and as we'll see, it certainly was. The Giants weren't just any Major League team. There was no Major League team that had a greater relationship with Japanese baseball than the Giants franchise. The very first fully professional Japanese team was formed in the 1930s. The Yomiuri Giants were named the Giants in honor, respect of the New York Giants. And it was Lefty O'Doul, who had recently been playing for the New York Giants, who was the guy who sort of helped them get organized, and it was he who suggested the name of the Giants. And the only year Giants not only adopted the Giants' name, they adopted the Giants' look and feel. They had the color scheme, their uniforms, the logo. They were modeled on the Giants. So the Giants franchise was kind of embedded from the start as a link to Japanese baseball. And of course, the key person in all of that was, as always with Japanese baseball, Frank Lefty O'Doul, who played for the Giants twice in his career. And of course, during those tours with the Giants, he got to know Horace Stoneham, the young owner's son, when Lefty O'Doul was there, and then later the owner himself. O'Doul and Stoneham knew each other very well. They were very, very close friends. They stayed in touch when Lefty concluded his major league career, went back to San Francisco, his hometown, to the Seals. They remained close. In fact, for a short time in the 1940s, the Seals were actually a Giants-affiliated farm club, and it was through Lefty O'Doul and the Seals that the Giants were able to get Larry Jansen to come to the Giants, and he was their ace pitcher for the 1951 pennant. By 1960, the Giants had gone ahead and moved to San Francisco, Lefty's hometown, and Lefty, when was employed by the Giants, he was a batting coach, spring training instructor, but more than that, he was an ambassador. He was their spokesperson in a lot of ways, and of course, he was their connection to Japanese baseball. And this picture I'm showing you here is from the 1960 tour. Lefty had a broken leg or something. He had some sort of an injury, but that didn't stop him from going. He was the key guy who organized the 1960 tour with the Giants. Here he is with Horace Stoneham. He would have been the key organizer of the 1970 tour as well, but sadly, Lefty O'Doul had a heart attack and died in December of 1969. So it was his protege who took over organizing the tour. Cappy Harada, who I'm sure many of you know his story, he's a fascinating character. Sadamu Cappy Harada was a Californian. He was born in Santa Maria, California, a Japanese-American Nisei, I guess that would make him. He was a high school baseball player, loved baseball. He, during World War II, was spared internment because of his bilingual skill and probably his charm and cunning, knowing Cappy Harada. He worked as an interpreter for the United States military. And then following the war, he remained in Japan and really became, along with Lefty O'Doul, the key figure in bridging the gap between Japanese baseball and American baseball. Even more than O'Doul, Harada really understood both worlds. I mean, he was American, he was a Californian, he spoke fluent English and understood United States culture and United States baseball, but he also was Japanese by heritage, spoke fluent Japanese, spent a lot of time living in Japan, and really was the guy who really made sure that the proper people were involved for these sorts of things. It was through Harada that in 1964, the Giants were the first Major League Baseball team to directly employ Japanese-born players, and one of them, Masanori Murakami, made it to the majors and was quite the sensational player. This caused a rift between Major League Baseball and Japanese baseball about exactly who owned Murakami's contract. But by 1970, that bad business was over with, and so Harada arranged for the Giants to come and tour. So the 1970 tour itself. All of everyone's worst fears were realized. The weather was terrible. It was very, very cold. They even had snow on one of the days. And the Giants players who, they were used to Candlestick Park. They knew cold weather. They didn't know this kind of cold weather. It was brutal. They were not at all comfortable. They weren't comfortable as well with their accommodations, which were not, shall we say, of Major League standard. They played their first games in Tokyo and then were going to go on a little road trip down south. Well, Horace Stoneham and Cappy Harada flew first class or, took the bullet train, very comfortable down there. Well, not the players. The players had to get onto a rickety little Japanese tourist class airplane, which was not designed to accommodate 6-foot American ball players. They were very uncomfortable. And then once they got there, they had to take a little tiny bus with all their equipment, for 2 hours. It was very uncomfortable conditions. The Giants players weren't weren't thrilled with all this. And of course, this was also taking place during spring training, which for the players is not a vacation. The spring training for most of the players is a crucial point in their career, right? I'm struggling to make a roster spot here. I really need to do well. And this just totally interfered with their capacity to do that. Among the problems they faced were a limited access to practice facilities. The games were scheduled, they had games, but they had very little time other than the games to engage in practice or workouts, which was not well received by the players. And of course, this also had some impact on the games themselves. The Giants were in spring training mode, and while their manager, Clyde King, you know, made sure he understood, we're here to win, you know, we're gonna give our best effort to win. Well, it was still spring training, and they also were trying to figure out who's going to make the team, so they didn't play the regulars all 9 innings. They certainly didn't pitch the starting pitchers, you know, deep into the games. They got everybody at bats, you know, to make sure that everybody was getting the playing time, and it was not a competitive effort presented by the Giants. The Japanese fans were not pleased with that. The Giants didn't appear to be trying to win. One of the issues was, you know, pitchers in spring training, one of their workout routines is to run in the outfield during the games. Well, these weren't Arizona spring training outfields that had ample room out there. These were Japanese ballparks with tight fences. And so when the pitchers are trying to run in the outfield, they're like running into the outfielders. This didn't go well. And of course, the Japanese fans thought it was just another way that the American players were not taking this seriously, were being insulting to their hosts, and a lot of incidents happened where it was just, the games were not happy from the Giants' standpoint. They were at the conclusion of it quite happy from the Japanese standpoint. The Japanese players were kicking the Giants' butt. Giants lost 6 out of the 9 games they played, which was unprecedented in Major League teams touring Japan. In previous times, Major League teams had no trouble with these Japanese opponents. Well, in 1970, the Giants did have trouble with the Japanese opponents. They were quite competitive. And this is the one thing I most especially remembered as a kid. To add injury to insult after all this, Juan Marichal, the Giants, you know, Hall of Fame-bound superstar ace pitcher, with all the cold conditions there, came down with a bad cold, which progressed to a bronchial infection, which made him very sick. So a doctor prescribed him some penicillin to deal with the infection. Marichal had an allergic reaction to the penicillin and was very sick. He, you know, could have died. It was a very severe reaction. He was hospitalized and came home dreadfully ill. Being Marichal, he didn't want to go on the disabled list. He wanted to come back and pitch. And after about 3 weeks or a month or so, he did come back and pitch. He was not in condition to pitch yet. And so the first half of the 1970 season, Marichal struggled terribly. He'd never had any of this kind of struggle before in his career. And this was one of the lingering sort of bad implications of the Giants' tour. But there were some positive things. Willie Mays, who had played for the Giants in the 1960 tour, and so well remembered that, he was quite impressed with the dramatic improvement in the quality of play that the Japanese players were presenting. They were better coached, they were, you know, they had better technique, but they were just bigger and stronger athletes. 10 years in that period of Japanese economic development, these players were much better, had much better nutrition, child nutrition than their previous generations had. And they were growing big and strong. They were growing to look like Americans. They were 6 feet tall. And they were quite impressed with that. Horace Stoneham, the Giants owner, was very impressed with what he saw. As we'll get to in a minute, Stoneham had a longer range strategic interest in all this. Stoneham, as you probably know, was among the very first Major League Baseball owners to take a very serious interest in Latin American baseball and really organize a team of scouts and develop and recruit talent from Latin America, which had made the Giants farm system the best in baseball through the 50s and 60s. And Stoneham was thinking the same along the same lines about Japan. So one of his intentions with this tour, as well as the 1960 tour, was to assess the state of Japanese baseball and make the right connections with Cappy Harada as his interpreter and guide to develop Japan as a source of baseball talent for the Giants. And so to that degree, he was quite pleased with what he saw. He thought Japanese baseball was ready for the Giants to exploit it. So to conclude here, what are the objectives that the both parties had here? Well, from the Giants' perspective, the first objective was to make money. And of course, every team's, they're professional teams, that's their business, is to make money. For the Giants, it was more critical than that. The Giants had come to San Francisco, and for the first 10 years in San Francisco, they enjoyed very robust attendance. It was a very, very profitable move for them. But in 1968, the A's arrive in Oakland and just about exactly cuts the Giants' attendance in half in 1968 and 69. That was a big financial blow. They suffered significant revenue shortfalls in 68 and 69. They weren't yet in emergency mode, but they've not had a couple of good years. And so Stoneham was able to get a big fat paycheck out of this. Lotte Rines guaranteed Stoneham $150,000 for this trip. $150,000 may not sound like a lot today, but in 1970, for a baseball team, $150,000 was a lot of money. It basically paid Willie Mays' contract. That was a big expense that Stoneham had ameliorated for him. So Stoneham was very successful at making money. The second objective was to have some fun. This is not just normal spring training. We're going to get to go to Japan. He gave all the players $500 each in spending money. You know, go out, buy some cameras, buy a pearl necklace for your wife. The players, okay, that was all right, but they didn't really see that as a fair compensation for the drawbacks that they were having to endure. So the fun part of it, it was probably not terribly successful from the Giants. But the third point, the Stoneham was very pleased by what he saw. The Giants, in fact, signed, I believe, two amateur players to play in their minor leagues as a result of the 1970 tour. Stoneham didn't know, of course, yet, that Japanese baseball was not going to submit itself to be under the thumb of the United States Major Leagues the way it had happened in Latin America. And so Japan was not going to allow itself to be a recruiting ground for American baseball talent. Stoneham didn't know that yet, and he, at this point, was seeing this as a very successful step toward the Giants really, really being ingratiated with Japanese baseball and really being seen as a friendly a place where you should probably think about sending your best players. For the Lotte Orions, the first priority was make money, and that it was successful, even paying the Giants a very generous $150,000. Lotte and their organizers made money. The Giants, they sold a lot of tickets on these nine games. It was well received by the fans. I think the Japanese teams had a lot of fun. It was a big deal for them to humiliate the great Giants of Mays and McCovey and Marichal. To be able to beat these guys six out of nine games was really a point of pride for the Japanese baseball, and they were quite pleased with that. They were testing themselves. They were seeing how well they had progressed as a baseball playing country, and it was quite evident by 1970 they were significantly better than they'd ever been before. And in fact, in this particular small sample, they were quite capable of defeating major league teams. So it was a success from that regard. That's all the slides I have. So if we have any questions or comments, I'll be happy to engage you. Christopher.
We have a side question there, but you mentioned the Giants had a major drop in attendance in 68 and 69. Just looked up, and what about as many games in 69? How come there's been this drop by about a third or so?
The question was the Giants' drop in attendance in 68 and 69. The Giants were quite competitive. The team on the field was still very good, but yes, their attendance dropped not quite half, but very substantially in 1968. It was because of the Oakland A's. The Bay Area market for baseball didn't grow when the A's arrived. It was now divided in half. The A's also were a very good, young, competitive team in those years. They didn't draw very well either. Both teams were drawing about 800,000 a year, which was, you know, not the worst attendance in the league, but not as good as most teams, and certainly not as good as either the Giants or the A's would have gotten had they had the Bay Area to themselves. Yes, sir?
Earlier today, I was talking to a woman who's from Tucson, I think, and she was mentioning that she's friendly with Jim Marshall. And Jim Marshall's 93, and he would love to talk to somebody about that trip.
Lives in Tucson, you say?
With Tucson, somewhere in Arizona. I don't know if it's Tucson, somewhere in Arizona. He would love to talk to somebody who's close by about that trip, because he was on that trip.
And he was on the 1960 trip. He was not on 1970.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I happen to live in Tucson.
All right.
Can you after?
Yeah.
Jim right. Marshall. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
She said he's in great shape.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Yes.
He still works for one of the teams over there too.
Yes. Oh.
That's all.
The question is, what is it about the Giants as an organization that poised them to be on the forefront of the internationalization of the game? Was it Stoneham? I actually wrote a book on this subject. Yes, it was primarily Horace Stoneham. Horace Stoneham had zero public image. He eschewed, you know, the press and didn't give interviews and was very shy. And so his story wasn't well known. Certainly not known like guys like Walter O'Malley. You know, his story was very well known. But Stoneham, in his quiet way, not through any sense of altruism or idealism, he just did it for the economics of it. Where's the cheapest source of baseball talent in 1949? It's Negroes in the United States and in Latin America. And so Horace Stoneham, he was already a very good friend of Alejandro Alex Pompez, who was the owner of the New York Cubans. Stoneham was good friends with Alex Pompez because the Cubans played in the Polo Grounds, which Horace Stoneham owned. And so he was Alex Pompez's landlord. And so established a very good relationship with Pompez in the late 40s and early 50s when the Negro League's business is falling apart because of integration. Stoneham hired Pompez into his front office, the first black man in a major league front office 25 years before any other team did this. And Pompez was Stoneham's agent in Latin America. And it was through that Stoneham really saw the benefit of developing these pools of talent, meeting the people, getting to know the relationships, and Stoneham absolutely wanted to do the same thing in Japan, and he was working on that. Yes?
Now, despite this opening to Japan, when you think of Japanese players, stars in the United States, you think of Ichiro with Seattle. Yankees had a home run hitter, I forget his name now, that was went with the Yankees.
Matsui.
And Texas Angels. I mean, how come the Giants didn't have a really
The Giants wanted nothing more than to do that. They tried very hard to do it. The only reason the Giants weren't able to successfully exploit that market and bring Japanese players to play with them is the Japanese baseball didn't allow it. This is probably a good time to tell the Masanori Murakami story. In 1964, through Kapi Harada, the Giants arranged to bring three Japanese young prospect minor leaguers to play a season in the Giants minor league system, 1964 season. And one of the three, of the three players, the two were just minor leaguers who didn't have any major league potential. But one of them, Masanori Murakami, was sensational. He blew the California League away. And in September, the Giants called him up to the major leagues and he blew the National League away. He was a sensational young pitcher. And so the Giants said, aha, we've got it, we've got our guy. And so they wanted to have Murakami now be with the Giants. Well, this was not the understanding that the Japanese team, the Nankai Hawks were the Japanese team that owned the contracts of these three minor leaguers. And they said, well, hang on a second. We know how good Murakami is. He's not going to play for you, he's going to play for us. It provoked a very, very big controversy between Major League Baseball and Japanese baseball, then all the way to the mutual commissioners to be resolved. The resolution of it, the compromise was, okay, the Nankai Hawks allowed the Giants to keep Murakami for one more year. At the end of that year, it would be Murakami's decision as to whether he wanted to remain with the Giants or go back to Japan. At the end of 1965 season, Murakami said, okay, I'll go back to Japan. How much of this was really his independent decision, or whether as a 21-year-old Japanese young man, he was doing what his elders expect him to do, I don't know. But with that, the Giants didn't get Murakami. But still, by 1970, it hadn't been completely determined yet that Japanese professional baseball would not allow its players to go to the United States, but by the mid-70s, I think it was pretty well resolved that if you wanted to play baseball as a Japanese player, you're going to play in Japan. And it wasn't until the 1990s with Nomo, Hideo Nomo, that the bridges were finally crossed and with compensation, with posting, and you know, the major league teams had to properly compensate the Japanese teams, and then they could begin to recruit Japanese players. But the Giants absolutely would have had their versions of Orlando Cepeda and Juan Marichal, the Japanese players, if they could have, they wanted to. Any other questions?
Yes, sir.
The question is, were the Giants players encouraged to interact with the fans? Yeah, pretty much, you know, as far as it was done in 1970. Japanese, you know, baseball games are really raucous affairs. The fans do organized chants and there's music and it's a really big deal. The Giants boosters, their own local fan club, came to Japan for one of the games, at least one of the games. And that was, you know, very well received. There's lots of good-natured banter back and forth between the Americans and the Japanese in the stands. The Giants had press conferences and stuff where they would. But you know, from the players' point of view, they weren't having a lot of this. They didn't want to do extra work. There was not a great sense from the players that this was all in their interest. So I think a lot of it was more played up by the team than actually delivered by the players.
Let's give a wonderful hand to Steve.
Our next speaker is someone else that you all know and have seen up here many times. Mark Cantor presents often and presented this morning, I understand, right? On the Dominican Way of Baseball. And he is also 12-time Sabre Trivia Champion, which just blows my mind. Mark has been to Japan several times, including the Japan Ball Tours, which I want to plug this year, this fall. Japan Ball, run by Bob Bevesi and Shane Barkley, is coming back for their first time in 3 years for a tour of Japan and Korea. I'm going, and I'm very excited to go for my first time. And I encourage anybody who thinks they can get away in late September for any amount of time to check out japanball.com for what I understand are amazing tours. So Mark today is going to talk about the 1968 St. Louis Cardinals trip to Japan, a trip previous to this Giants trip. So Mark?
I just want to say that I'm going on the tour. I'm going to South Korea and in Japan as well, and I was on the tour in 18, and it is a fabulous tour, and not only for baseball, but just to get immersed in Japanese culture as well. Well, in 68, the St. Louis Cardinals go to Japan. This is different. The tour is sponsored by Yomiuri Shimbun, the big paper in Tokyo, and they believe they own the Giants, and the intent is to play not only the Giants but to play all-star teams as well. They are fitted pretty well. I think a lot different than what happened to the San Francisco Giants 2 years later. They're taking a flight over on Japan Airlines, and during a fog delay, on the left is on the left, it's Red Shane Deans and Commissioner Eckert are talking with outfielder Lou Brock. They're going to be away for 33 days. This is 22 days after the end of the World Series, and for some people out here who aren't old enough, what you had was, back then, you had a pennant race, and then you had a World Series, and you were done. This is the last year of that. And funny that Steve mentioned about being 12 years old. I was 12 years old in 68. And it really was a formative time for me, because I actually remember that World Series, and I actually remember, with Gibson in game one, and then game seven when Flood gets blinded by the sun and all that. Gibson is answering his fan mail, and they're being served. It's very, very, very nice. The stewardess is serving sweets to Red Shane and his wife. And they arrive at Haneda Airport, and I want to thank, again, as Steve said, I get all the photos, almost all the photos from Rob and a friend of mine in Nara, Kanya Honoki, who's a doctor there. But this is from Rob, and they're being welcomed at Haneda Airport. And again, you have the women there in ceremonial dress welcoming the cards. The cards are having, the Shimbun has their newspaper welcoming the cards, and then we see a luncheon, whatever, and it's I think in the center that looks like Tim McCarver and Mike Shannon. I'm trying to figure this out. But I think it looks like McCarver and Shannon. And the people who were on the tours were Gibson, Carlton, McCarver, Shannon, Orlando Cepeda, Lou Brock, Flood. Others will talk about Phil Gagliano and Mike Torres. And in Sporting News, they had asked McCarver why he wanted to go, and he said he and Mike Shannon wanted to go hunting, and Orlando Cepeda said that he wanted to buy electronics, and because of the burgeoning electronics industry that they had. Again, you see, they're at, I believe this is, I assume that this is game one, Rob. I assume it is, and that they're at Korokin Stadium. And again, women are in their ceremonial dress, handing flowers to the Cardinals, and that's red chainings. On the top right, it's the Yomiuri Giants. They're watching all this. And the bottom right are the Cardinals' wives. I will assume that they're the wives. I will assume they weren't girlfriends, because I don't think that's how the system worked back then. I just want to show you Orlando Cepeda and Phil Gagliano in action. Gagliano, people remember Gagliano was a backup infielder, but they show that he hits a home run to give the Cardinals a victory over the Giants, and the scoreboard lights up in both English and Japanese. A fountain spouts water after each home run. Well, this is interesting stuff, right? I mean, we know we have one stadium in America where something happens. We know that it's the Astrodome. Something is happening. But I don't think you see water in any stadium until, at Kauffman, but I don't even know if it was Kauffman. I forgot the name of the stadium. Royal Stadium. I think that's in 73. I think that comes up. So this is interesting. This is in 68. Let's talk about the games. Let's talk about some of the games. In game one, I believe, Gibson pitches. And the important thing about Gibson is that he really didn't want to participate in the series. He had said that he had a bad, his arm was hurting him in the second half of the season. Think about it, his arm was hurting him the second half of the season, and he still had that pretty low ERA. And it's 22 days after the end of the World Series. And he also had gotten a shot for a vaccine before they went, and that was hurting him as well. And actually, in game one, I don't think he pitches so well. But he knows he has to go because he's the star of the Cardinals. Without him, it really isn't much of a might be much of a competition. But Carlton pitches in that game. And this is before, I mean, Carlton was good, but this is before he's known as lefty. And Carlton said in a 1994 article in Sports Illustrated that Sato Ura-O, who was the player in Japan, I think he had 49 home runs that year, that O had hit a home run off of him. And Carlton said, I got to I'm in Japan, let's figure this out. He says after that, in that game, he said he's going to throw sliders. He said, Gibson tried to throw sliders, but it hurt his arm. But Carlton, every once in a while, would throw a slider. It didn't hurt his arm. And he says that after that, O did not fare well against him. And if you look, O did not fare well. He fared well against everybody else in the series, but did not fare well against Carlton. It's true. Whether or not that's true, when he started to use his slider is up for debate. But that it is interesting that he mentions that. We see Gibson and O together. O had a great series. He was the best hitter amongst everybody. I think he hit six home runs, and I think he batted like 340, something like that. But a couple things happened. Before the series, if people remember, old enough to remember, there was an expansion draft in the leagues. The Cardinals had Bobby Tolan and Wayne Granger. And you could only keep 15 players on the first round of the expansion. They had come up to 15, and they didn't know whether or not they were going to keep Granger or Tolan. So what they did was they traded Granger and Tolan to the Reds for Vada Pinson. So, but they invite Tolan and Granger to come on the trip. Well, Tolan has a really good trip, and the players are saying, maybe we shouldn't have traded him. And Granger pitches great. And the people know, Bobby Tolan really did, until he got hurt, I think, in a motorcycle accident. Bobby Tolan was a heck of a player for the Reds, and Granger was a very, you know, and relief pitching was really just starting to be important. Granger was a great relief pitcher for the Reds. Throughout this, now here's an interesting thing. Had you heard of, I mean, I don't know if anybody had heard of this. And my wife and I are trying to figure out why they had charcoal pits and a large kettle. Well, I can understand a large kettle for brewing tea. Tea's kind of important there, right? It's ceremonial, it means something. The charcoal pit, I was thinking maybe they were making food, but Lynn said maybe it was just to keep them warm. And that's, and so I give Lynn, so it was just to, and I really wasn't thinking, but again, obviously, if you're going to some places, and they had to play in Sendai, and I've been in Sendai, even in September, it can be cold, absolutely. So she's not here, but she was the one who figured that out. I don't know, again, I couldn't tell whether I was at the end of each game or at the end of the series. The Americans got called a happy coat, and what it is just emblems on the coat, and they exchanged a lot of stuff, and this is one of the things that the Japanese gave the American players. It's a shorter length version of the kimono, golden. So I figured out the Shane Deans and Billy Muffet. I think Billy Muffet was the pitch, if people can help me, was the pitching coach of the Cards, if they had, you know, or the, and they're just meeting the reporters. And again, things have changed so much. There are ashtrays here. It's just interesting to see what they had. And they're just talking to the, Billy's trying to obviously convey something about the pitchers. So let me mention, I know Steve mentioned about that they got money. In 1968, the Cardinal players got $3,000 worth of yen just to attend, just to go. And then they got another $700 worth of yen to spend in Japan to buy stuff. So in the center there, that's Bobby Tolan looking at a camera to buy. Some wives are looking at stuff to buy. Here, and looks like your bottom left, Stan Musial doing. He looks like he's pretty happy eating. That's Bob Gibson and his wife, and they're actually eating Japanese food. Up there looks like Musial and Commissioner Ecker dancing, and it's pretty interesting. The food was very interesting because they stayed at a really, you know, as opposed to the Giants trip, they stayed at really nice hotel in Tokyo, and they could get Japanese food or they can get American food. In fact, I think I forgot which coach it was for the Cardinals saying, well, I feel like I'm back in America. I got a piece of pizza. But, you know, but some of them actually, like Bob Gibson and others, did try the Japanese food. But some yearn for the American food. What's interesting is there's a story. I don't know if I put in the article, but the story is that Lou Brock came back. He had a bit of a problem with customs. He came back with 29 suitcases full of stuff. I don't know if it's in there, I don't know, but it's like, really? Really? He says, well, you know, when you're married, you buy stuff. There was on November 16th, there was, this is on ABC Wild Wild World Sports, I believe, Rep. Barber is doing the game. I don't believe he's there. I think he gets the video and he does it back home. But the Cardinals did face did play that day, and Gibson did pitch again, and Gibson did not pitch great again. He didn't pitch great, but just want to show you what other things were happening on that day. Obviously, this is out of a New York paper. How long do I have? Good. Out of New York paper, so it's ABC with channel 7, and also with, and then you could see the football and hockey games as well. They went to Hiroshima, and I've been to Hiroshima. I don't know if you've been to Hiroshima. People have been to Hiroshima. Hiroshima is the most solemn place I've ever been to. And they said that it was very important for the young players to go, because the young players that didn't have that much knowledge about it, and they didn't have much feeling about it. The older players did, because it was only 23 years after the bombing. But the younger players really didn't, and it was very important for them to get that. The other thing is, Gibson and others went to military hospitals in Japan, because that's where the boys from Vietnam were convalescing, and they were there on Marine Corps Day. And Gibson, the erudite Gibson, so do you know where the Marine Corps started? And he said, well, of course, it started in a bar in Philly. And so Gibson's always out there trying to, he's pretty smart guy. And one of the convalescing, who was a Marine, asked him, so how's your leg doing? Because remember, the year before, he got hit by a line drive by Roberto Clemente. He says, well, you know, my arm's not doing great, and now my leg's not feeling good, now that you mentioned it. Just to tell you some others, I have a couple minutes. Mike Torres had the best batting average for the Cards, and he also pitched well. A pitcher named Inatsu, a left-handed pitcher, was great against the Cards. The Cards, I think, set the record for the most wins in that series. Funny thing was, 2 years earlier, the Dodgers had gone over, and they were like 8-9 and won in that series. And all the Japanese writers and everybody thought, well, we're going to really sweep up here against the Cards. But the Dodgers, they were affected by the fact that Mari Wills wasn't allowed to go over there because he did something. He played in the band in Hawaii or something like that. And Koufax obviously didn't go. There were some issues. Darryl Spencer, who was a player there, he said, the Japanese players, they just don't understand the game. They don't hustle, which is an interesting thing to hear that 55 years later. And Cardinal players like Gibson and Carlton hated the flat mound. And Gibson would hate the flat mound because, you know, later they changed the rule. The mound went in the States from 15 inches to 10 inches, and in fact, he complained to Tim McCarver. He says, they're changing the rule because of me. He says, well, you broke the game, so they have to do something. But I want to thank Sabre for giving me the opportunity to write this book. I want to say, again, I was 12 and 68. It's the sweet spot. I'm convinced of being a baseball fan, and I want to thank Rob for allowing me to speak today. The Yomiuri Giants play at the Tokyo Dome.
Right now.
Yeah.
Where do they play before? I mean, where were they playing?
Was that
Kyoren Stadium? Which Kyoren Stadium.
Oh, Kyoren
Stadium.
Right next to where Tokyo Dome is now.
Oh,
in 88.
I knew it was.
Tokyo Dome is similar to Skydome. That's all I'm going to say.
Looks like the Metrodome inside.
Excellent. Thank you to Steve, to Mark, for all of you coming out, seeing us instead of Dave Smith. We hope to see you next year, and hope if you're not already members of the Asian Baseball Committee, to please sign up, and look forward to volume 2 of our book coming out later this year. Thanks so much.